depends on the species you're talking about and what roles they play. And most of the cave organisms are going to be invertebrates if they're the cave obligate ones. The cave fish is one of the few vertebrates that spends their entire life in the cave. The other larger vertebrates that we're more familiar with, whether it be things like raccoons or possums or what else, reptiles, you know, snakes, which of course are cold-blooded, as we say, they oftentimes will venture in and they will become part of that food web or that nutrient cycle, but only to the point where they're in the entrance or the twilight zone area of the cave. They're not typically going way back into the cave where a lot of these species are carrying out their entire life cycle. So we have predators, and cave beetles we're finding to be an incredibly important predator. They are going to be feeding on things like those cricket eggs. In turn, there may be some things like salamanders that are capturing some of those cave beetles as well as the cave crickets. So there you see multiple links already forming in our little food web. So we tend to oversimplify even nutrient limited but environmentally stable places like caves. We don't expect the food web to be as complex as, say, a tropical rainforest. But even so, we still oversimplify it because it can become very complex for the human mind to get around all that, and we don't know, quite frankly, all of the links. If we haven't even identified or discovered some of the species, we certainly haven't discovered all the links between those species in terms of who's eating who. The decomposer community, I think, is extremely important to cave systems. When something dies, it's very important, and things are right there ready to consume it. And then we get down to the fungi and the bacteria that live in the cave, very understudied, but obviously very important part of the food web. We haven't talked about bats, but like the cave cricket, the bats are one of these organisms that certainly use the cave for very important parts of its life, whether it's as refugia for hibernation, as we refer to it as a hibernaculum, to take care of their young and so forth, to overwinter. But in turn, when they're foraging actively, you know, they're out consuming thousands of insects every night, each individual bat. And they come in during the day back in the recesses of the cave. Now, we don't have huge colonies of bats, to my knowledge, in Hidden River Cave, but quite frankly, we don't know how many bats use it, I'm sure. But I know that they've probably done bat counts and done emergence counts there and have some idea of how heavily it's being used. But each one of those individual bats is bringing in, again, nutrients from outside the cave into the cave, and then defecating in the cave and producing bat guano, which there's your base of your food web starting again. So there are all these connections, and the cave fish started us talking about this, so I'll kind of circle back to them because they are an aquatic species. And the cave fish, the cave crayfish also, which is sort of an omnivore, but again, very opportunistic, because here they are living in an underwater stream in complete darkness. So they are very dependent on rain events and other flood events that are going to be flushing either water through the cave system that has nutrients and various types of debris, organic debris, insects, other things from the surface, or water that when the Green River tends to rise at certain times of the year that backs up into the cave, okay? We call that a cave reversal of flow, and I'm sure that could also happen in places in Hidden River Cave. Either way, you're introducing water from the outside world into the cave system that obviously the cave fish and the cave crayfish hopes will contain food particles in the form of various types of organisms that otherwise wouldn't live their entire life cycle in the cave, but happen to wash in. So you have the opportunistic cave fish and cave crayfish there who must have just some incredibly incredible sensory systems, you know. to be able to detect. We know fishes can detect electrical signals and signals and vibrations in the water. They're very good at that. And I'm sure that the cave fish has a very enhanced system for doing that compared to, say, a surface fish. If that study hasn't been done, it would be a very interesting one to conduct for an animal physiologist or maybe even an engineer. But that shows you how limited their nutrients are and how opportunistic they must be to take advantage of those time periods when things are flushed into the cave. Them and also the cave crayfish would fall into that category as well.